Okay, so what I'd like to talk about now is, let's we're talking about NP completeness. I'd like to once again show you the main idea for NP completeness, because it takes a long time. I find a little bit that all takes on one slide, and it's very, very simple. I find it takes a long time for this to sink in. This is my general belief. Okay, and people are asking me questions and getting it backwards, which is a sign that they're starting to think about it. Okay, but until you don't stop getting it backwards, you don't understand it. The idea here is we want to prove what is the implication of the following algorithm. Solve the Bandersnatch problem by translating the input from Bandersnatch to an input for another problem, mobility. Call the mobility subroutine to solve the translated instance and report the answer to this as the answer to the original problem. Okay? If you do the translation such that the answers are the same to both problems, that Bandersnatch of G is the same as mobility as Y, then you get a correct algorithm. Okay? But what is the implication of this? If you have a fast way to do mobility, it gives you a fast way to do Bandersnatch. But if there is no fast way to do Bandersnatch, there is no fast way to do mobility. Okay, that is really what the implication here is. Okay? So where does the known hard problem go? Is it Bandersnatch or mobility? Bandersnatch. Which is the problem you're trying to prove hard? Mobility. Okay? And that is sort of the logic of our reductions. Any questions about the logic, how we do it, stuff like that? Okay? So what I'd like to do is go through, last class we proved a couple of, I proved to you vertex cover was hard and integer programming was hard. Those were two of them that I showed you. My claim is that when you're trying to prove a problem hard, the more problems you know are hard, in principle, it becomes easier to prove certain problems, prove the next problem hard. Why is that? Because we can use any NP-complete problem to translate it to, as Bandersnatch. Okay, and if you pick a problem that's close to the problem that you're trying to prove, maybe you can avoid the really baroque constructions like we showed with vertex cover. Okay? So let's look at two, what I'm going to claim is, now that we know that the vertex cover problem is hard, two other very important graph problems are very easy to prove hard. Okay, and these are worth understanding because you'll see that they're relatively simple reductions, and yet you get the hardness of other interesting problems for free. What was the vertex cover problem? Does anyone remember what the vertex cover problem was? What would the vertex cover be? You know it's hard. What is it? What's the question? Yeah.
You're given a graph, you want to find a small set of vertices such that every edge touches one of those vertices, right? That's what you're saying, right? That is vertex cover. And that one we proved was hard. Any questions about it? Okay, well, let's look at another problem. Let's look at the clique problem. Okay, what is the maximum clique problem? The maximum clique problem asks, suppose, let's say, I give you a graph. My input is a graph G and some integer J. And I give you, okay, I ask you, does the graph contain a subset of J vertices such that every pair of vertices in that subset are connected to each other? They form a clique. What is a clique? Well, again, if you think about it back, if we thought about the friendship graph, a friendship graph, we have every pair of vertices that are friends, that every pair of people that are friends are connected by an edge. What is a clique? It's a group of people, all of whom know each other, right? So they would sort of hang together. So the question is, given a graph, find the largest clique. Okay, what is the largest clique in this graph? How many vertices? Five. It's pretty easy to see this one. Okay? But in general, I will claim that the problem of finding the largest clique is hard. Okay? Any questions about that? How might we prove this?
Okay, what problems should we use as a starting point? What NP-complete problems do we know about? We know about set. We know about three-set. We know about integer programming. We know about vertex cover. Which one of these sounds most like, looks most like, smells most like the complete problem? Vertex cover. Why is vertex cover smell like it? Both of them are selecting subsets, and they're selecting subsets from graphs, right? Subsets of vertices. Okay, so there's some superficial similarity between them. That's why I would agree with you, vertex cover is the most promising possibility. So what do we want to do?
How does our logic work?
Well, what is Bandersnatch and what is Mobility? I want an algorithm to solve vertex cover by calling CLEEK. What is the input to CLEEK? A graph, let's call it G prime, and a J, such that we want to ask, is there a clique of this size? What is the input to vertex cover? A what? A graph, and what else? And a K, okay, which tells us, is there a vertex cover of size K? Okay? And now my reduction is I have to show you this translation. Right? Everybody agree with that? Let me show you how you can do any questions about the strategy. But now I have to show you a translation where I get G prime from these two and J from those two, such that the answers are the same. Okay, any questions?
Well, let me show you something cute. And then along the way, I'm going to solve another, give you another NP-complete problem.
The problem of independent set in a graph, okay, is the problem of giving a graph, find the largest set of vertices you can, such that there is no edge between pairs of, between any pair of vertices in the set. Let's say we had the enemy graph, where we have a pair of vertices between any two people who hate each other. Suppose, let's say, you were given the enemy graph, and you wanted to throw a party. Okay? How would you use the enemy graph to identify a good set of people for the party? What would you, the vertices of people, the pairs of edges between any pair of enemies, what do you want? You'd like to find as large a subset of people as you can, such that none of them, that there is no edge between them, right? Okay, because then the party could get ugly, right? And you want the party to be, you would always say, well, I'll invite nobody, I'll have my own party. And then there's no hatred, but in the end, it's a very boring party, okay? So what is the maximum independent set problem? Given a graph G, how do I find the largest set of vertices if there is no edge between them? Everybody know what max independent set is? Any questions? Suppose I wanted to prove maximum independent set hard. Yeah? Is it the opposite of vertex cover? Well, let's think about that. That's a very interesting question. Suppose I give you this graph here. I don't know what graph we want. I'm unfortunately running out of ink here. So let's say this was my graph. What would be a vertex cover of this graph? Probably something like this, right? And what you're saying is the opposite, the maximum independent set is the opposite of vertex cover. What do you mean by the opposite? You mean the complement is the way that I would say that in graph theory speak. Okay? That the minimum, if you take anything that's a vertex cover, the rest of the vertices have to be an independent set. Why is that? Suppose not. Well, then you had a pair of edges, and you had an edge here, with the property that it stands two vertices that are not in the cover, right? So how was it you have a vertex cover before? You didn't, right? That's a proof. So what does this tell me? Can we now prove that maximum independent set is hard? How would we prove that maximum independent set is hard? What's Bandersnatch and what's Mobility? Standard stats would be G and K. And maximum independent set is on G prime and let's say J for now. Can I prove the maximum independent set is hard? How do I do it? What is my graph? G prime, what are you doing? You're taking, and let's take what's the relationship. It says, is there, how is the question of, does graph G have a vertex cover of size K? How does that relate to, does graph G prime have a vertex cover, a maximum independent size set of size J? What is G prime going to be and what is J going to be? So that the answers are the same. Yeah? J, you say, equals N minus K. That means that if K, if I want to know, is there a vertex cover of size K? That's sort of like asking, is there an independent set of size N minus K, right? What is G prime equal to? Is it the complement or is it the original graph? It's the complement of the vertex cover. But we don't know the vertex cover, we're changing the input, not the output. So what is the input? The input is the exact same thing. This, I claim, is the hardest proof of maximum independent set. Okay? So the problem of creating the largest party with no hatred in it is hard. Why a lot of parties end up with it. Okay? But any questions? See why this worked. Let's see what this worked. What we observed was that in any graph, the complement of a vertex cover has to be an independent set, right? Because otherwise it can't be an edge between any pairs of things that are not in here. It could be edges from these to things in the cover. But basically we know that finding the largest independent set, anything that's not in the independent set, has to be a vertex cover, right? Because every edge, if there's no edge induced by the vertex, index induced by the independent set, then the rest of the vertices have to form a cover, right? So to get a big independent set, you need a small cover. So finding out if there is a vertex cover of size K, that means we've got an independent set of size n minus k on the exact same graph. Okay, this is the hardest proof of independent set. Any questions about that? This is the kind of reduction you should be able to do. Okay? Some other reductions start to get baroque, but this logic you should understand, and it's a good question. Why does that work? Any questions? Yes. Where then, n is the number of vertices in the graph, so let's be more precise. G is equal to B comma E, right? It's the set of vertices and the set of edges. N is really the size of the number of vertices in the graph, right? That's to be right. Any other questions about this? So this is all that we need to do to prove that independent set is hard. Any questions? Now the independent set is hard. Might independent set be a better thing to relate clique to? Let's think about it. What is independent set asking for? Yeah? A lot of vertices where there's no edge between them. What is clique asking for? The opposite. Well, opposite would be great because then we can sort of do the translation. What does opposite mean? Complement. So what I say is, let's correct ourselves, go back here, and say maximum independent set. How would I construct my G prime and J prime such that the maximum, there's a clique of size J in G prime, if and only if there is an independent set of size K in G? What is G prime and what is J going to be? To take the opposite, the complement. How do we elaborate on that? Okay. What? Well, let's think about what we're actually doing. So let's take a look at this. Let's say this is the independent set I want to find. Let's say that this is my graph. And I'll say, let's say this is my graph. How can I find, this is my graph, I'm asking, is there an independent set of size 3? How can I convert this to a clique problem so that the answer will be the same? Okay? So that I can get the answer to the independent setness from the cliqueness on the transformed graph. Yeah? You're saying, let's let G prime, this is G, let G prime be the complement graph. Meaning we're going to add an edge between any pair of vertices, have an edge between every pair of vertices, if and only if there was not one in the original. So what is the complement graph going to look like? And is that all? Or are there other things in there? We're also going to get this, and we're also going to get that, right? Is that all that's in the, is that the complement? Which, what, where? This edge? Well, this edge, if it's here, it's not going to be in the complement, right? Okay. How would I prove that, whether this is right? Well, how many edges are there in the union of the graph and its complement? N squared, N choose 2. Not N squared, okay? N choose 2 is, what's N? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 choose 2 is what? 5 times 4 divided by 2 factorial is 10, right? Am I right there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I think I got them all, right? Now, what's interesting? What's the relationship between the independent set here and the clique here? Add it together and you get the whole graph of J. I'm sure I know what that means. Okay, yes? Exactly right. If you have a clique here, that means you have an independent set here. Is that right? Let's think about it. What does it mean if you have a clique in the complement? If this was the enemy's graph, the complement is the friend's graph, right? So what happens if everybody's all a friend? Yeah. Okay? Then we know that, in fact, there's no enemies here within them, right? That's really another way to look at it. Okay? Or to be precise here, the complement of a clique is an independent set. Does everybody agree with that? A clique has all pairs of edges. A clique has an independent has no pairs of edges. So what is the reduction here? What is the relationship between G and G prime and K and J? Okay, yeah. You want to say J equals K and G prime equals what? Complement of G. Right? A complement is the operation, replace an edge by a non-edge and vice versa. Okay, any questions? We suddenly banged out two more NP completeness proofs. Okay, before your eyes. Okay? Any questions about that? These are good ones to understand. Like, if you don't understand this one, you don't see why it's what it is, these are good to talk about. These are still simple. Okay, these are things that I can expect you to understand. Okay? Any questions about these? Yes?
Are you always going to double cross a vertex? Like, if the eight is the independent set, meaning it's double.
Well, the reason is because, in fact, what this is saying here is basically we know the property that if a subset of vertices in G prime is a clique, then we know that that same subset is an independent set in G, right? So if you want to find a clique of size K in G, you may not know how to do that, but if somebody else says, hey, I know how to find cliques in a graph, say, well, if you can find me a clique of size K in the complement graph, you're really answering my original problem. That is the logic here, right? I am using the clique subroutine to solve this problem I don't know how to solve. Okay? That is your question, or kind of?
It's just that you're finding not the clique, you're finding the opposite. So it's like G prime way simpler
than G prime, I'm finding the information that would tell you where the clique is. Okay? A clique is a subset of vertices, right? I am finding a subset of vertices, if you think about it, right? Or I'm proving that there is a subset of that size. Now, the way I'm proving it is because, yeah, they're dressed differently. These vertices are dressed differently in this graph than in that graph. But in fact, it's the exact same subset of vertices. So that if you find a clique here, it means you've got a clique, an independent set up there. That's really what it is, okay? It looks different. Now it's got clothes on. It didn't have it before, okay? But nonetheless, okay, it tells you enough, okay, to let you answer your original question, okay? Any questions? Questions about either of these? These are good reductions to know about, to write down and to see why they are, convince yourself why they are true. Any questions? Okay? Let me do one more reduction, which is the problem of the day. What was the problem of the day? Okay? They asked you to prove some problem was hard. What problem was it? What? Subgraph isomorphism, right? So let's think about the subgraph isomorphism problem. What was subgraph isomorphism? What was the input for subgraph isomorphism? Does anyone remember? So I was giving you two graphs, right? The input for subgraph isomorphism. So I was giving you a graph G and a graph H. And the question was, is H in G? Okay? Is that what the problem, does everybody agree that's what the problem is? Given two graphs, I ask you, is this graph H in G? Let's look at some examples here. Let's say that, we have a little star here. Let's say this is my graph H, and my graph G looks like this. Is graph H within G? Is there any set of 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 vertices in H that maps to G? I claim the answer is no, right? Yeah? Okay, isomorphism or subgraph isomorphism means I want to find a labeling of the vertices of G and a labeling of vertices of H such that there is an edge in H if and only if there is an edge in the corresponding vertices of G. Graph isomorphism is, are the graphs the same? Subgraph isomorphism says, is this little graph somewhere in the big graph? And I think you all agree that the answer to this is no, right? But what about, now let's say I add some more vertices, some more edges. Is this graph now within there? Yeah, the answer is yes. Why? Because if I label this thing as 6, and this has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, there's an edge here, every edge of here is represented in here. Okay, does everybody agree with that? Any questions? Are there any questions about what subgraph isomorphism is? Okay? Now, if we wanted to prove subgraphisomorphism hard, how would we do it? Okay, we need a Bandersnatch and a Bobili. Right? What is subgraphisomorphism going to be, Bandersnatch or Bobili? Bobili. So I'm going to do subgraphisomorphism of G prime, let's say G prime H prime. What would be a problem to try to convert to it? Which of the problems we know of smells a little bit like graphisomorphism? But Clique sounds reasonable to me, so what does Clique say? Clique says I have given as input a graph G and an integer K, right? Now, is there a way that I can build a G prime and an H prime such that you can solve the Clique problem if you know how to solve subgraph isomorphism? Someone proposed such a construction. Here I have as input a graph and an integer. Here I have two graphs. Does anyone want to propose such a construction? Such that I could solve Clique if I knew how to solve subgraph isomorphism? So you want to take the number of vertices in H and make that K. Okay, it's an interesting idea, but it's a little backwards, right? You're trying to make H from this. So now let's go backwards. How do I make H? Is there a way I can make H prime from K? Construct a graph on K vertices such that every pair is adjacent to each other, right? And what is G prime going to be? G prime equals G. So you tell me, if, under what conditions will the complete graph on K vertices be a subgraph of G? If there is a clique of size K in the graph, right? So this is exactly the reduction we're looking for. Okay, think about this for a second. Okay? This is another good, simple example. Okay? Yes? No. Okay? Clique of GK is a question. You're given a graph and an integer, saying, hey, is there a complete graph of size K within G? Right? That's what that problem is. Subgraph isomorphism says I give you a big graph and a little graph, and ask, does my little graph contain my big graph? Right? I know this problem is hard. Okay? The evidence is still on the board. I want to prove that subgraph isomorphism is hard. How did he do it? Well, he constructed a graph H prime such that, and how much time does it take to build a complete graph on K vertices? K squared time, you could write a program to do that, right? Could you write a program to print out the complete graph? Where I goes from 1 to K, where I goes from 1 to K, I K, 1, 2, 3, 4, yeah, okay? So what is this saying here? Okay? I am saying that I can that if I could solve subgraph isomorphism quickly by feeding it the right input, namely a complete graph on H prime, I could use that to solve Clique, right? Isn't that what he just showed you how to do? If I gave you and said, look, I've got this great subgraph isomorphism routine, and he said, oh, I wanted a few cliques, okay? I've got this great subgraph isomorphism routine. How quickly can you use it? The answer is yes. This routine is showing you how to use subgraph isomorphism to compute Clique. Right? It expects an input, two graphs, you give it two graphs. But the answer to this, G prime will contain this subgraph if and only if this graph contains a clique of size K. Does everybody agree with that? Question.
Aren't there multiple subgraphs of size K within G though? And so what do you have to pick on those with each graph?
Well, first of all, you're not testing anything. You're the author of this program, right? What you've done is write a program to find cliques. Okay? This thing accepts two very general arguments, right? Subgraph isomorphism is a very general problem. It can do lots of different things. But by if we fix this parameter, H prime, to be a complete graph on size K, that is powerful enough. Even though it's even more general, you could put trees here, put all kinds of things here. But just putting that complete graph there is enough to enable it to compute cliques, right? That's really the important point here. We're not searching for H prime. We are designing this. We're writing the program. You're building H prime as the interface, if you wish, between the subgraph isomorphism routine and the rest of your program. This thing expects two graphs, so you build a graph. Not just any graph, but the special graph. The graph of a complete graph on size K. And if you do this, now you have a clique-solving program. Right? Does everybody see that if you have a subgraph isomorphism-solving program? This shows you how to use it to find cliques. Okay, that's the key idea here. Yes? What is a clique? A clique is a complete, is a set of kth vertices, such that every pair of vertices is connected. Okay, so here's the clique. Okay? Any questions? Yes?
Is it like you have to find a strongly connected component of size K?
It's not a strongly connected component of size K, because a strongly connected component simply meant that it was a path from, that was a directed graph. Remember, just a cycle on K vertices was a strongly connected component of size K. And finding strongly connected components was easy. We did that in linear time. So ask me, given a graph, find the largest strongly connected component, linear time. We can do that easily. But given a graph, is there a set of K vertices such that every pair is connected? Notice the missing of one little edge is going to break that clique. Okay, so finding a clique is a very exact thing. Okay? Yes?
So, the subgraph isomorphism, the H prime there, it doesn't have any restriction, does it? Or you're saying.
Well, in the problem subgraph isomorphism, yeah. This does not have any restriction.
So, I'm still not able to relate. Then how are we placing a restriction on
it? You are placing a restriction to it by calling it with that argument.
Okay.
So what is your favorite Unix program? Let's say, what is a Unix program that has two inputs? Okay? Let's say, diff. Does everybody know what the diff program does? Diff program takes as a, you can pass it a file A and a file B. Okay? And it says, are these two different? Right? Now, what if, let's say, it weren't even specified by any two pairs of files? What if we wanted to write a special program for checking did anybody plagiarize Skeena's book? Okay? How would you write a Skeena program detector? You would take his input, the file, that's suspicious. And the other one we always fix to being my textbook, right? I have used the general diff program, but I'm now, because I'm allowing you only one free input, the program still does something useful. It gets anybody who steals my book.
So,
okay?
Out here, this is a special case.
Exactly right. We're using, saying clique is really just a special case of subgraph isomorphism. Right? That's exactly what we're doing here. Okay? So why is subgraph isomorphism hard? Well, it's just a special case of it is clique. So if you could solve subgraph isomorphism, you can solve clique. And I'm telling you, you can't solve clique. Okay? So the more general routine is certainly going to be hard. That's exactly right. Okay? Yes? How do I see the pattern? Well, what I see is that subgraph isomorphism is saying, is there a subgraph here which matches this, right? That's a subgraph isomorphism problem saying. Is there a subset of vertices such that the graph that you get from that, all the edges match the second argument? Well, if I give you the second argument as a special graph, then I want to claim that that's sort of how you see it, okay? That look, clique is fine asking, really, is there a special subgraph in G, right? That's the way to think about it. Clique is saying, is there a subgraph in G that is all connected? Subgraph isomorphism is saying, is there a subgraph in G that is equal to H? Well, for the special case of H being all connected, the problems are the same. Therefore, this problem is as hard as clique. Maybe harder, okay? But it's at least as hard as that. Any questions? Any questions about this thought process? These are three groups that you should understand, okay? Because these are this is sort of the logic behind what we're doing. The constructions are all pretty simple. Look, I even wrote them on the board, and you might even be able to read them. Okay, these are simple. But it's important to think through the logic, make sure you understand why that's proving something. Yes?
So, to begin with,
the
n is not
for
the whole complex.
Yeah.
Is it going to be anything other than the final
complex?
Is there something that's
supposed to be complete? First of all, question of how do you go about proving n problems n be complete? Okay, that's right now the question that you recommend. I will now go and explain to you how I prove problems n be complete. Okay? And so, I may sometimes give you a hint as to this problem, you should use this one because it's going to make it easy. Okay? Otherwise, you should just use the ones we have in class. You should not go and memorize a long list of NP-complete problems. Okay? Yes? All you have to do is define a reduction, explain why the reduction is right. Okay? I mean, it's easy to write a program that doesn't do anything. But why is the reduction right? Okay, you have to explain why that is. Okay, and again, we've explained it, because in fact, finding if H prime is a subgraph of G, if H prime is a complete graph, then any time it finds a subgraph of G prime that is complete, by definition, that's a clique, right? And if there is no subgraph of size in G prime that is a complete graph of size K, then there is no clique, okay? That's why this is right, okay? Any questions? Any questions about this? Yes? Okay, let me now show you how I prove things NP-complete. Okay?
Tricks of the trade type of thing. Okay? Make sure you understand why those proofs are correct. But now let's go through how do you actually, if you're in the trenches, how do you prove a problem is NP-complete? So what are my tricks of the trade? Hold on. I've got it here, I think. So the first thing, what are my techniques? Okay? That the first question is, make sure your source problem, okay, your Bandersnatch, if you wish, is as simple as possible. Okay? So why is this? Let's think what you're trying to do. You're trying to show how to solve Bandersnatch by using Bobelli, right? How do you make this your job as easy as possible? To make it as easy as possible, the problem up here should be as small as possible, as small a subset of instances as possible, right? Why is 3SAT easier to use than satisfiability? Because all satisfiability instances include 3SAT, right? All 3SAT instances. So if you're translating, show me how to translate all satisfiability instances. That is, in principle, can't be easier than showing me just how to translate the 3SAT ones, right?
You know, it's more work you have to specify to reformat it. So my goal when I'm designing these things is to use as simple a hard problem as I can. Okay? What is a simple hard problem? I, for one, will never start from traveling salesman. Why? Traveling salesman has numbers on it, right? The problem of finding, and if I was going to use it, I would say, well, look, traveling salesman, when you restrict it to things that have the triangle inequality, turns out that's also hard. But I'm not going to use that one either. Okay? A special case is Hamiltonian cycle. Hamiltonian cycle, given a graph, is there a way to visit every vertex exactly once and get back to where you started from? That problem is NP complete. That is like traveling salesman where the weights are only one or infinity. So that's a simpler problem than TSP. That makes it more attractive to me. Everybody see why? I don't have to specify how to translate all these big ungodly weights, negative weights, God knows what. Traveling salesman is Hamiltonian cycle is hard. In fact, Hamiltonian path is hard. So in fact, that you don't have to, if you can find a way to visit all vertices and don't have to get back to where you started from, that's just as hard. That might be simpler to prove work with. In fact, it's even true that Hamiltonian path on directed graphs, where the graph is planar and every vertex has total degree 3, is hard. So, again, knowing that is probably more than you need to do. But in general, the easiest, the most restricted hard problem is where you want to start. Yes? Well, it may or may not be better, but somehow that when I'm doing a construction, I'm going to have to, if it's Hamiltonian path, I know I've got to go, I don't have to worry about whether they're start and end or connected. Okay? And that might be easier to do my construction. I don't know. Okay? But it should be clear that, for example, limiting the degree of the graph makes it simpler. Letting the graph be directed, I can know that you'll always do the walk through the graph in the right way. Okay? So, make my source problem as hard as possible, as simple as possible. Make my target problem, my mobility problem, the one I'm trying to prove hard, make that one as hard as possible. Don't say, I want to prove subgraph isomorphism is hard. I shouldn't be trying to prove I should allow myself the freedom to think about as hard an instance as possible. My subgraph should be big, right? I shouldn't force myself to have small subgraphs, okay? And think about what can I do to make my target problem difficult, okay? That's what I need to do to think about proving it hard, okay? That may not be clear, but we'll talk about it some more maybe when you see an example. What other things do we know, okay? Select the right problem for the right reason. When I am proving a problem NP complete, I only use 4 different problems. Okay, I know that there are several hundred NP complete problems. I personally only use 4 of them. Okay? Basically 4 of them. Satisfiability, which has basically usually often will work, but it's kind of messy. So if I can't get anything else that works, I'll go to 3-set. Vertex cover, if I'm picking a graph problem where the hardness depends upon selecting a subset of vertices, vertex cover, clique, independent set, all of these things are picking subsets of vertices, I would be starting to think about a vertex cover-like problem, okay? If I had a graph problem where I'm trying to find an ordering of the vertices, I would probably start from Hamiltonian path, Hamiltonian cycle, something like that. Because that captures the idea of a hard problem whose hardness is because of ordering. Any questions? The final problem is basically knapsack. We haven't really talked about it, but and maybe I'll prove the hardness of this next class. Okay? Integer partition says, given a set of integers, is there a way to find a subset of them that totals up exactly up to k, the sum of those, you know, the sum of those of that subset is up to k. Okay,
That problem is hard. So if I have a number problem, I use integer partition, a graph problem on subsets, vertex cover, a graph problem on permutations, Hamiltonian path, anything else, I use three-set form. Any questions? Okay. Again, in principle, you can use any problem to translate to any problem. It's a question of how hard you have to work to do it. Any questions? Okay. Again, when I think about doing this, okay, the way I am thinking about it is, I'm trying to shape one problem to another. I'm trying to make it so that the solution you get here is the solution that I want up there. I have to think about doing my translation so that I force you into the right behavior. That's really what you're doing here, right? You have this problem you want to solve. You have this known hard problem. How do I force it so that the solution you get here is the solution to that one? And I think about, what kind of gadgets, what kind of things can I build, okay? Since that sort of preserves, it sort of forces the shape of this into that. Again, we'll see some examples and maybe you'll start to appreciate that. Okay? Any questions? It seems vacuous right now. But the other thing that I'm thinking about when I'm asking these questions is I think at a high level, how do I force myself into doing something? How do I force it so that you either choose this or that, but not both of them? Okay? And then later on, how do I construct a gadget for doing this? A gadget meaning a little substructure, a little part of the reduction to do that. Any questions? And finally, when I'm given a problem, I don't know if it's NP complete or not. I usually have a sense whether it's hard or not. If it's hard, I try to prove it. If I can't prove it hard, I say maybe I'm wrong, and then I try to find an algorithm for it. If I can't find an algorithm, then I try to prove it hard, okay? And I move back and forth. Don't get too stuck in one way or another. Okay, any questions? Tell people are bored, they don't see this, how this works. Let me now give you my NP completeness challenge, okay? I will now prove a problem NP complete before your eyes, okay? How much time do we have in class? About, what is it, a little half an hour? A little bit less? Okay. Here's a book, a famous reference book. It lists several hundred NP complete problems in the back. Okay? The categories are, I'd like to tell you what the categories are. I want you to pick a problem for me to solve. Okay? So what are the categories? Let's just go through this thing a little bit. I haven't looked at this for a while. There is graph theory. Network design, which I'll say is also graph theory in some way. Sets and partitions. Games and puzzles, which you shouldn't do because that's actually a little tricky. Logic. there's the reasons for that. If you picked one, you'll see why. Okay, I'm not trying to hide you. But logic, automata theory and languages, program optimization. Okay? Why don't you pick someone from the class? Pick somebody else. Listen, tell them to pick some. You pick somebody else from the class. Okay? And you pick somebody else from the class. Now, I want that person who just got picked to choose between graph theory, network design, sets and partitions, logic, or program optimization. Which one do you want to pick? Logic, okay? Let's see about that one. That's a dangerous-sounding one. Does the class like logic, or does the class want to veto it? Okay, logic it is. 89. I think I never had logic before. Okay? Which one of this one? Logic. Okay, satisfiability is logic. You're right. So logic, under logic there are how many problems? 19 problems. Okay? So I want you to pick, whoever picked that problem, pick it down, pick somebody else from the class. I want you to pick somebody else. And I want you to now pick a number between 1 and 19. Whoever's left. What?
5.
Okay, so what is the problem here? Okay, it's interesting. Okay.
Have you picked an interesting problem?
So what is the problem here? It says maximum two satisfiability. Okay.
This is a well-known problem, although I've never actually seen a proof of its hardness.
So we'll have to come up with one on the fly.
So what is this problem? Let's make sure we understand what the problem is here. Okay?
Let's think about this one. Okay, this is an interesting one.
So Maslow's two satisfiability says that I'm giving you a set of clauses such that every clause has two literals in it. The I, B, J, where one might be complemented. You know, three-sat, remember, had clauses of size 3. Two-sat has clauses of size 2. And in fact, it is hard, as I mentioned, it's polynomial time. Given a two-sat instance, can you find a way to assign the variables such that you satisfy all of those clauses? So for two satisfiability, there is an algorithm that runs in polynomial time to satisfy it. This is not asking you to satisfy it. This is for asking you to satisfy the most clauses you can. Okay? So I now give you a set of pairs of variables. Okay? And I ask you, is there a way to maximize the number of clauses you do satisfy. Okay, everybody sort of get what the problem is? So the input is I give you a set of clauses, C1, dot, 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 CM, and I give you an integer K. And I ask myself, is there a way to satisfy at least K clauses, okay, by setting things true or false, okay, where every clause is of size 2? Any questions about it? Okay, people sort of, any questions about what this problem is? I now understand it. And if you don't appreciate this, you've got to understand the problem. Okay? So, how would I solve two-sat if I knew how to solve this problem? Okay? I wanted to solve two-satisfiability. How would I solve it, yeah? I would say run max sat is max two sat. If two satisfiability was hard, I would want to do it so that I would probably do it like this. I'd probably say two sat on a set of clauses. I would say C prime equals C, K is equal to M, right? And I'd say max two sat of C prime K. If I could satisfy it, if K was equal to the total number of clauses, this would give me an algorithm to solve two-sat, correct? Everybody agree with that? Because this problem says I've given a set of clauses saying, is there a way to set the truth so I satisfy at least K of them? If K is all the clauses, K is equal to the number of clauses M, then I would claim that this gives me a way to solve two-sat, right? But what's the problem? Can everybody see that? What's the problem? The problem is two-sat is easy. Max two-sat is hard, so all I've done is give you a slow algorithm for computing two-sat, right? So that's not what I want to do, okay? What is it that I want to do?
I was going to say, he do sat with K many elements and convert that to one.
Well, okay, if I asked for sat with K many elements. What I do claim is, if this way, I just prove it by the same argument. I can prove that max 3 sat is hard. Does everybody agree that maximum 3 sat? I give you a set of 3 clauses, a set of clauses. Each with 3 elements. I ask, find me a way to satisfy at least K of those clauses. That problem is hard. Why? Because 3-sat is hard. Max 3-sat is hard. Okay? But now how can I solve, in general, 3-sat hard? That's going to be tricky. How can I make max 2-sat hard? Looks like I'm in trouble. Okay? Any questions here? Think about what my goal is now. I want to find a way to take some problem that is hard and to convert it to max two sets.
Is it possible to get max three sets to max two sets?
Well, that might be an interesting idea. So let's think, what do we have? We have clauses and K. Okay? How would I do it? I'm just going to, let me think, try to think this through, because I'm trying to solve it. I'm going to say, which of my problems should I use? Should I use preset, Hamiltonian cycle, vertex cover, or integer partition? Which one sounds most like it? Preset. This smells like a preset problem, right? So I'm going to have my preset up here. And here I've got a set of clauses and nothing else. So what do I want to do? What is my strategy going to be? The obvious strategy for me is going to be, I'm going to want to try to convert the clauses here into another set of clauses, right? Such that this is going through my three-set clauses into a set of two-set clauses, such that if you can solve enough of these two-set clauses, you've really solved the other one. Right? Does everybody agree?
K
says, can you satisfy at least K of them? For three sets, you have to satisfy them all. This says, can you satisfy 90% of them? Okay, yes. We did not show how to go from clauses of three to clauses of two. We showed how to go from clauses of two to clauses of three. So that's the kind of idea that I want to think through. Let's see if we can do anything with this. Okay? What can I do here? Suppose I have C1, a clause of size 3. Let's say A, B, C. Can I construct a set of two-set clauses that does something interesting with them? Okay, now the ones that seem to me to be most interesting right now might be A, B, B, C, and C, D. C, A. Okay? Now, what do I know about this? Let's just stop and think about it. If I do this, how many clauses are going to be satisfied? Okay, if this thing was satisfied, okay, if there was at least one literal here, at least two of these are going to be satisfied, right? Maybe three, but at least two. Does everybody see that? So my first attempt to try to translate it is going to be the following. And I don't think this is going to work, but let's just go through and see what my strategy is. Again, I'm flying without a net here, okay? What might I do? I might take each one of your CM clauses and produce 3M clauses and ask, so basically I've now got C prime is going to be equal to basically the 3M clauses of this form. And K would be equal to what? 2M. Okay? Let's think what this means. Is it true that if there is a satisfying, if I can find a way to satisfy at least 2M of these, okay, I therefore get a satisfying truth decider. Okay, I have to prove that there's an if and only if relationship. Is that going to work? Well, one way I think it will work. The other way I don't think it will work. Let's see what happens. Is it true that for every, if there was a satisfying truth assignment, a satisfying truth assignment for my three-sat clause, does that mean that I then get at least two-thirds of my new clauses satisfied? I think the answer to that is yes, right? So if there is a solution, okay, to satisfiability, there is a way for me to satisfy two-thirds of the clauses, right? Now, I would be done if I could show that any way you satisfy two-thirds of the clauses, that meant that you went back and did that. Okay, is that true? Show me an example where it's not true. What you want to say is, let's think about what we might do. Your concern is, what if I satisfy all three of them? I have yes, and a lot of clauses. What your concern is, what if I have a lot of clauses where everything is lit up, right? And a few clauses, one clause, where nothing is lit up, right? That's where I'm in trouble, right? So suppose, let's say, there was a way that you could satisfy one of the clauses with all three variables high, okay? And one clause sat out there not being satisfied. My max two-step answer from here would be, yes, I can satisfy two-thirds of the clauses. But that does not mean that showed me how to satisfy my original thing. Does everybody see that? Okay, let me see why this doesn't work. That's the key issue here. Any questions about why this doesn't work? Okay? So one way my translation works, but the other way it does not. Okay? So now I'm in trouble. I better come up with better ideas. Okay, but it's a little bit better. Any questions? Okay? Questions? If I ran max two set on each clause individually, well, maximizing each one of these variables in a clause in isolation is easy. I'll just set those three variables true. It's how they get combined. Two-thirds for each clause. Okay, let's think what I can do now. Hold on. Let's think what I can do. Now, I want it to be the case where... Let me tell you, now I'm going to use something else I know just to sort of, because I think we'll finish the job, although maybe not satisfy you. Remember I told you I only know about four problems? I use four incomplete problems because I want to know a lot about them. In fact, there's a special version of satisfiability, which is hard, which someone else can look in here to prove I'm not lying, called 1 in 3 sat. Okay? So the following problem is hard, okay? Is there a solution? Okay, tell me, again, maybe it will work, maybe not. So one problem that is hard is, given a set of clauses, is there a way to satisfy it so that every variable exists exactly, that there is exactly one true literal in every clause? That is 1 in 3 set. Okay? It has to satisfy it, but it can't satisfy it too much. Okay? Does that problem then make this kind of an idea work? And the answer here is maybe. Okay, so let's now go through my logic, and then we'll go back and work through here. So how would I do this? What if I make this 1 in 3 set? Okay? Now what I want to claim is something different. Let's think about this. Again, I'm still not sure it does quite the right job, but I'm starting to get close. If there is a 1 in 3 set solution, okay, then in this reduction there will be exactly 2m of these things covered. Right? Let me just think about this for a second. What? Yeah, it does look at the other way around, it's still the same thing. What other things can I do, though, to force this thing? What if, let's say I did the following. What can I do to fix this thing up? What if I also say, if I want exactly one of these to be true, okay, Okay, two of those will be true. Is there a way I can add some other clauses to this, such that exactly one of them will be true? Let's think about this. What if I say, not B, not C, not A, not C, not C. Okay, let me think what I want to do here. What if I also add some other clauses? Suppose I put each variable by itself, AA, BB, as I'm like cheating now. This means making my problem a little bit harder. Okay? Now, I will get points for satisfying, for every time that I have a satisfying literal in here, right? Now, what if I want exactly two-thirds of these? Okay. Let's see if it will work. I'm going to let my number K here. I'm going to make a large number of clauses. Let's just try to think about this. Okay, to try to give you some idea for working with this. We're getting in trouble here. What if I let this number K be such a large number that there are fields, at least conceptually? Okay? And this is going to count how many truths are there in the first clause. Okay. Let's say I have a lot of copies of, okay. Suppose I create a million copies of these three, okay? A million copies of each of these clauses. And I have a 1 in 3 set solution for it, okay? There will be exactly 1 million of them that are satisfied, right? How do I make the problem harder? That was another trick I said I should do. How do I make my problem harder? Remember, I made my input problem more restricted. One way to make my problem harder here, what if I said exact to set? Where I ask, is there a way to satisfy exactly K clauses? Okay? That's harder than the other problem, but probably not that much harder. But once I know how to do this, I expect I can then work backwards to fix that problem. Okay? Does everybody sort of agree with that? So what I'm now trying to think of, can I prove exact two-set is hard? And my initial idea is something like this. And again, I'm running out of time. Let's try to figure this thing out. Suppose I create a million copies of each one of these. Okay? This will give me a million, this will be true. This is going to be a one-stat solution. If and only if there is exactly a million of those, right? So what if I create a million possibilities here? What if I create, okay, these are the millions of possibilities. These are the hundred thousands of possibilities. These are the hundreds of possibilities, tens of hundreds of possibilities. I'm going to sort of arrange the counts of the number of times I'm replicating each clause to be wildly distinct. So the only way to get an exact match of a number, okay, is by satisfying picking one of these. Because if you pick two of them, you'll have too many. And then force you that in order to get the exact to pick up the exact number on the other side, you have to get exactly one of those. Okay? So that's not convincing to anybody. Okay? I have a little idea of what I'm doing, but still not quite clear what I want to do. Any questions or comments? Yeah? No. You have to solve one of the problems. You have to complete set of problems, you might be on the final, right? So let's think a little harder here. How else can I make max two set hard? What if I use a graph problem? Let's try to think about this. Maximum two set, yeah? Like what? I'm not sure. I have another idea here. Let me just take a look at this. What if I have a graph like this? What if I make it like vertex cover? Okay, let's think about vertex cover. What are edges in vertex cover? Edges are pairs of vertices, right? A two-set clause is like an edge, isn't it? Okay? So what if I wanted to think of it as in the following kind of a notion here? Maybe I can build a graph where each clause is described by an edge. And I want to ask myself, is there a way to pick true or false such that I cover all the edges? Okay? Does that seem like a reasonable idea? It's starting to sound to me like an almost reasonable idea. Right? Two-set clauses are like edges. Okay? And I want to try to find a way, a small number of things that will pick it up. Okay, so let's think what I can do. So what is my argument going to be? My hard problem is vertex cover. And I want to prove max, let's say max two set. I'm not playing games here anymore. Okay, let's think about this then. I want to show you how to solve a vertex cover in a graph. Is there a way I can make it so that, this is maybe a little tricky, it's almost like I'm going backwards here. I'd like to know, can I construct an instance what I want to do is now say, can I build a clause? Let's just think about it. Suppose I can build a clause that says, okay. I want to try to find a way to do this such that the, okay, let's think about this. One more. How much time do I have? Another 3 minutes. Okay, this time I think it might come up empty. But let's just do this here. Let's see what we can think about. Okay? Vertex cover is in a graph is, okay, I have to now find a way, a set of variables for each vertex. And what I have a variable here represents the state of a vertex. Is vertex I in or not in, right? So one possibility would be that I ask myself, I have a clause that's going to say vertex 1 is in. So for a particular each edge, suppose I construct the clause VI, VJ for that edge being in. Okay? Right? Now what I'm going to have, okay, let's think what I'm trying to do. Now I've got a set of M clauses. Okay? And I want, and of course by setting them all to be true, okay, you would get all of them. But we want to minimize, find out, is there a way that I can make it so that you set no more than K of these things? to be true? How can I hurt you for setting variables to be true? One way I can hurt you to make by making variables to be true, and this is going to work, by the way. Okay? Suppose I set BI, not BI, let's say, not VI. Okay? And I make a lot of copies of these. A million copies of these for all I from 1 to J. From 1 to N. Okay? Now you see what I want to do? Your clauses that I'm going to have in your problem, there's going to be two types of clauses. One of which are negated variable clauses, of which there are a lot of them, right? Now, for you to want to make this thing true, in order to, of course, if you make them all negative, okay, you'll satisfy all of these, right? But this makes you want to make as few of these things true as possible, right? Because you get those. But in order to get these, okay, you're going to, in order to pick up these, you want to find a small set of variables to set true, a small set of vertices here, such that you will pick up every single edge clause. Okay, does everybody see the logic that I've got here? The details still are a little, have to be worked out a little bit. But this is going to work, okay? So let's think about it. I am taking my vertex cover problem, which says, is there a cover of size k? I am translating it into two-sat clauses, okay, where some of the two-sat clauses are exactly my edges, okay? And so you're going to want to make those things be true, okay, to pick up the edges. But you're going to want as small a number of them to be true as possible. So you also get to take advantage of these guys, right? Does everybody sort of see the logic that I have here? Does anybody see the logic I have here? Nobody. Okay? The next class, I will work out what the logic for this thing was. Okay, remember what I did a little bit to see if this will really work for next class. Any questions? Okay? Thanks for your attention. We'll talk next class. Yeah. It's possible. I think you run into the same problem that I had before. Yes, yes. Sorry. Okay.
Let me just turn this thing off for a second. Hold on a second. So, let's